Welcome to Expert Second Opinion. Investigators discuss the optimal management of HER2-positive gastrointestinal cancers. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love, bringing you excerpts from a CME meeting we held on Thursday, January 8th, 2026 in San Francisco during the Gastrointestinal Cancer Symposium being held during that time. The moderator for this meeting was Dr. Lionel Kanku-Fanqua from the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, and the faculty included Dr. Haley Ellis from the Massachusetts General Hospital and Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts, Dr. Eric von Kutzum from the University Hospitals Leuven in Leuven, Belgium, and Dr. Zev Weinberg from the UCLA School of Medicine in Los Angeles, California. Dr. Ellis began the meeting with a presentation on HER2-positive biliary tract cancers, followed by Dr. Weinberg, who commented on HER2-positive gastroesophageal cancers, and finally Professor von Kutzum, who talked about HER2-positive colorectal cancer. To begin, Dr. Fanqua presents a case and questions from the community survey.
The first case here is a 78-year-old lady with HER2-amplified biliary tract cancer that received frontline therapy with chemoimmunotherapy, progressed predominantly in the liver, resulting in some hyperbilirubinemia, 3.7 TBili, not amenable to stenting. So HER2-positive disease, progressing on frontline. What would you do here, Dr. Ellis?
Yeah, so not an uncommon situation that we find ourselves in with BTC, with hyperbilirubinemia. I think there are still good options we have available to target HER2, even in the setting of unstentable biliary obstruction. So zanidatamab actually has good safety data. We haven't seen any signal of hepatotoxicity. There's really no issue with from a pharmacokinetics perspective. So I think that's certainly an option to consider with close monitoring. There's also been data looking at FOLFOX and trastuzumab. This was a study done in Korea, looking in the second and third line setting with this combination in HER2-positive disease. Certainly, we give FOLFOX pretty routinely in these cases, and trastuzumab also has good safety and PK data. I would be a little bit hesitant about T-DXd in this setting, primarily because of that irinotecan-like topoisomerase 1 inhibitor payload. Certainly, the mechanism of action of an ADC is unique in that you're having tumor-targeted delivery. You know, there's really rapid clearance from the systemic circulation. So we wouldn't see the same toxicity that we'd see with irinotecan. And in these studies with T-DXd, they did look at bilirubin up to three times the upper limit of normal. But 3.7 would just be at the border of that moderate hepatic impairment. So I would certainly use T-DXd with caution.
Agreed. And I'm glad you mentioned FOLFOX. Obviously, that's the safest chemotherapy regimen in this setting. And sometimes, depending on the hyperbilirubinemia, you could always start there as a bridge and then introduce the targeted therapy later. The second case, a 72-year-old, maybe Zev can help us here, 72-year-old lady with HER2-positive biliary tract cancer with a reduced ejection fraction of 40%. Role of T-DXd versus zanidatamab in such patients. Is cardiac dysfunction a showstopper, a preference of ADC versus bispecific here?
So, I mean, I think the reality with cardiac dysfunction in a lot of these cancers is very different than the sort of the concern in breast cancer, where for the most part, these are long-term patients, and regretfully, right, these patients with metastatic biliary cancer don't usually have more than a one-year survivorship. So I think we have to think about cardiac dysfunction a little differently. Now, of course, you have to use it with caution, but I think maybe I'm wrong here, of course, but I would consider either of these agents in this context to be reasonable. You might want to use dose reductions, of course, but, the chronic long-term CHF use that you're likely to see with HER2 inhibition is not going to happen when, unfortunately, the patients aren't going to be on the drug for that long.
No, I totally agree, Zev. I think though there's no published safety data with an EF less than 50%, I agree. I think in this patient population, we would strongly consider using it. I think as long as patients remain asymptomatic from a CHS perspective, it would be reasonable to consider with good monitoring.
I agree. I think these patients have a short window of opportunity, so you don't want to forego potentially a good drug. But monitoring, I think, is the key here. Next, I think we have a 62-year-old gentleman with node-positive gallbladder cancer, HER2-positive, treated in the adjuvant setting with the capecitabine per the bill cap, and then unfortunately had a recurrence in the liver about a year later. He really wants to be aggressive. Would you give T-DXd or zidinatamab in the first line and skip front line? So I know you just went through the data, Dr. Ellis, but is there a scenario where you would forego standard of care frontline chemoimmunotherapy and jump straight to targeted therapy?
So it's certainly very compelling when you see that second line data to want to bring it to the first line. And I think that's why these first line studies are ongoing right now, is to see, you know, when we combine these targeted therapies with chemo and or immunotherapy, you know, do we see that same benefit? You know, per the approval, T-DXd and zanidatamab are for previously treated patients. And, you know, capecitabine being 1 year prior, by the trial criteria for all of these first-line studies, as long as he's 6 months out, would be eligible for a first-line study. So certainly I think a first-line study would be the most ideal. And if they did have progression on Gemcitabine, has great second-line options. There's encouraging data from India looking at Gemcitabine plus trastuzumab in 90 patients with HER2-positive BTC. So I think there's a good signal there, and we'll see what these first-line trials show.
Zev, Eric, would you agree? Would you approach this differently?
No, I completely agree. So I would consider this patient as a first-line patient and start and discuss with the patient to start with Gemcitabine/Durva. And although it's an option to go with for HER2-targeted treatment, but it would be out of the label in our setting.
The next one is a 93-year-old frail elderly female with metastatic gallbladder cancer, HER2-positive. And how would you treat this patient in the front line? Again, kind of similar question, different picture in terms of the patient. Is age just a number here, or would you approach this differently? Maybe Eric?
It's, of course, difficult without seeing the patient, but a 92-year-old patient, 93-year-old patient with an ECOG-2, usually in our setting, it's best supportive care. It's for sure not chemotherapy in this setting. In an in-depth discussion, if the patient really insists, and an HER2-targeted therapy frontline could be an option. The question is, of course, which one? Do we go for trastuzumab alone? Do we go for zanidatamab with a patient like that? Trastuzumab deruxtecan and ECOG-2, 93-year-old patient, that's something I would not do in this setting.
Zev, I see you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably offers something. I think, you know, there is a little... Look, 93 ECOG-2 is hard to consider full-dose chemotherapy. I certainly agree with Eric. Probably offer some anti-HER2 targeted therapy, maybe with zanidatamab. We've, you know, safe agent as long as you're conscious of the diarrhea.
Yeah, I think the data is obviously very compelling, and the safety profile, the tolerability of zanidatamab seems terrible. So I guess at least I'll give the patient the benefit of the doubt and maybe give it a try.
I mean, these are sometimes the difference between the United States, where we tend to over-treat patients, right? I mean, that's reality. What Eric is reflecting is a reality.
We discuss more the best supportive care option in this type of patients, but it's an individual decision, of course, with the patient.
Dr. Ellis, you have a 70-year-old gentleman with metastatic BTC, status post frontline chemoimmunotherapy, progressing. He has two targets, HER2 and FGFR. I assume this is probably an FGFR2 fusion. How do you pick here between anti-HER2 and anti-FGFR? I know the topic here is HER2, but Dr. Ellis, you want to take that one?
Yeah, what a unique case. Certainly seeing concurrent FGFR2 fusions with HER2 positivity would be very rare. I'd love to know how exactly they're defining HER2 positive. If this is IHC3 plus in an FGFR2 fusion, it's certainly challenging to think about. Of course, we consider, you know, the toxicity profiles of HER2 agents versus these FGFR inhibitors, which can have a lot of on and off target toxicities. You know, what's the winner in terms of what's really driving the biology is hard to say. I think, you know, HER2 is such a heterogeneously expressed marker in BTC. FGFR2 fusions tend to be a very early thriver event and a clonal rearrangement, so it's a little bit more homogenous across tumors. But it's hard to say what is the right sequence. Probably maybe FGFR fusions weigh out a little bit in terms of being the strongest driver, but I think honestly we would try both, and I think the future is combination therapies. There's probably a lot of crosstalk in terms of downstream signaling and resistance.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the data with FGFR2, obviously we have a number of agents approved. We have a number of clinical trials, and I think in my practice I've actually sequenced patients with 2, 3, 4 FGFR and going on 3, 4 years. So I think this will definitely be a difficult decision, but I'll probably lean towards starting with an FGFR inhibitor in this setting. A different opinion from the panel here, or looks like we agree. Last one here is an 81-year-old gentleman with CKD, metastatic cholangiocarcinoma, has an IDH2, HER2 IHC2+, progressed on frontline chemoimmunotherapy. Would you target HER2 or IDH2 in the second line? Eric, you want to take that one?
The patient, as is indicated here, is HER2 IHC2+. So the indication is you need a positive FISH test after that. It would have been IHC3+, then I would go for HER2 targeted therapy, or IHC2+ with a positive FISH test, then I would do also HER2 targeted therapy. But if it's really HER2, IHC2+ FISH negative and IDH2 mutation, I may go for targeting IDH.
Well, we don't have an approved IDH2 inhibitor, at least in cholangio. So would that change your approach, Dr. Ellis?
Yeah, I think this is a slightly different situation than the last case where I think you have really two strong drivers. HER2 IHC2+, I agree with Eric, is hard in the setting of being ISH negative potentially in IDH2. We don't have any approved agents in cholangio. There's actually a nice abstract being presented here by V. Sahai from Michigan looking at IDH2 cholangio, and did show getting off-label ivosidenib, or not ivosidenib, enasidenib, does have a median PFS of 4 months, getting it in sort of the nth line setting. So certainly I think this is something that we would try and get off-label enasidenib for. The toxicity profile is very good, but IDH is a little bit of a unique biomarker in cholangio, and that it's not this very strong growth-suppressing marker to target.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for Expert Second Opinion, Management of HER2-Positive Gastrointestinal Cancers.